There's a growing debate as to what is the cause of the wildfires out on the West Coast, and as firefighters are managing dozens of fires throughout a four, maybe possibly five state area, the debate intensifies. In fact, name calling is now entered into the political fray about whether or not someone is a climate terrorist or not. And we wanted to kind of dig through all of this political rhetoric and try to get to the bottom line as to what it is that we're facing out there on the West Coast, because it is going to impact not only the climate of those states, but the climate of a number of states surrounding them. And Dr. Bob Zybeck, an experienced forester with a PhD in environmental science and program manager for the Oregon Websites and Watersheds Project, Inc., which is a 501c3 educational website focused on scientific management of Oregon's natural and cultural resources, joins us. Dr. Zybeck, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Doc, I read a number of your comments over a period of months as to what is actually happening out on the West Coast. And based on your experience, what are you seeing, and what is the primary cause of the wildfires that we're facing today?
Well, these fires have been scientifically predicted for decades. You build up fuels, as they've been doing, almost entirely on federal lands. These fires aren't happening on private lands. So when people say it's climate change, they've got the same climate on private lands, and they're not having these fires. They're happening on federal fires. Myself and others have warned very publicly, consistently for 30 years that these lands are going to burn up, that they need to be actively managed. You just can't let them grow into giant piles of fuel, and yet that's what they've done. So these were predictable. They've been happening way too often. The current series started in 1987, and until they get in there and actively begin managing these lands again, these fires will keep happening.
It's interesting. Governor Gavin Newsom made the observation that this is happening mostly on federal lands, but isn't that as a result of federal laws that have been passed that have kind of repressed and stymied efforts of the U.S. Forest Agency to be able to, and BLM, to actually manage these forests effectively?
Yes, it does. Federal laws and regulations in a wide variety of formats have been directly responsible for the mismanagement of the lands and resulting in these predictable fires.
So what restrictions actually came about? I understand, and I've heard you say this before, that back in 2001, under President Clinton's administration, there was a series of laws and restrictions that were placed on being able to manage this property in the hopes of keeping it in a pristine condition.
Well, it wasn't in a pristine condition. The Clinton plan was 1994, and that was just the final nail in the coffin, as they say. The actual problem started back in the 1960s. Creation of Wilderness Act, a lot of these fires are happening in wilderness areas that used to be occupied by people up until federal regulations stopped that. NEPA was adopted the exact same day that 50 lawyers were meeting in Washington, D.C., and formed a national environmental law industry. So the environmental lawyers and NEPA and wilderness in the 60s, then you've got the Endangered Species Act, the Clean Air Act, and then sometime in the 1980s, the law was changed so that the environmental lawyers could collect money directly from the government. So for any citizen could file suit. So a lot of environmental organizations were formed. If you look at the history, it looks like specifically to file suit to stop logging. So they used various means, Endangered Species Act being a primary one, to stop logging operations. And that led to a lot of economic hardship in rural communities. Myself and others were very concerned about that. Not only were these fires predictable, but also the demise of rural communities that produce, that work in the woods and produce products for the rest of us were severely damaged and remain severely damaged.
It's interesting that you make the observation private lands versus federal lands. As you know, Louisiana is a big timber industry state. I know a number of folks that are in the timber industry here, and they don't have problems with fires. They do their controlled burns, or what y'all refer to as prescribed burns, which is basically, you know, this is how you manage a forest. Actually, having all of that undergrowth, I'm told, in many respects, takes a healthy forest into an unhealthy condition. And the way that it has cured itself historically is when lightning strikes, it burns, and that forest comes back in a much healthier state. Is that incorrect?
It's only slightly incorrect. Lightning doesn't strike to clear the forest. People have been doing it
for thousands of years.
So, well, and it's an important point. On the west side of the Rocky Mountains here, about half of our forests are owned by the federal government. On the east of the Rocky Mountains, the federal government owns maybe 5 or 10%. So you don't have fires there. I'm assuming you have a climate change, but you don't have fires because your land is actively managed. On the west side, the federal lands are about half of the total, and that's what's burning now. But we've got areas, the area I studied for my dissertation, the Oregon Coast Range, has almost zero incidence of lightning. When we do get it, which is very rare, it's usually accompanied by heavy rains. So 100% of the fires are caused by people. Then we got a few volcanoes in other areas, and those will start fires too. But lightning is responsible for fires in certain areas, but you really need to actively manage the forests in order to reduce the number and certainly the severity and the extent of these fires. And that's been the warning for 30 years.
We're talking to Dr. Bob Zybeck, an experienced forester with a PhD in environmental science. Doc, what has been the resistance to prescribed or controlled burns? You know, as I said before, I know folks here in the timber industry, there's certain types of pine trees that you want to do it actually more often than not because it really makes healthy growth for the tree and so forth. And obviously, I understand how some folks are against this anti-timber industry, but isn't the issue much bigger than the timber industry?
Yes, it is. I worked in the reforestation industry for 20 years. We did lots of prescribed burning. And then the Clean Air Act was the act on that. This has been a whole series of federal laws and regulations going back to the 60s that have culminated in these problems. So it became too expensive to do prescribed burning here because of federal regulations, sometimes around the late 1980s or something. So those combinations of not being able to use traditional tools, some of them thousands of years old, and the battery of environmental lawyers filing suits for anybody that, well, we've got lawyers in Congress writing the laws so that they could file suits and be paid by the taxpayers has been the system in which most of these have gotten implemented. Most of them have become invented and then implemented.
You know, for years I hunted in Colorado and on federal lands, and I always saw the Forestry Service cutting fire breaks within those lands. And I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, that some of the provisions that were passed by President Clinton actually don't allow you to actually develop roads through these forests, which serve as fire breaks.
And not only that, they decommissioned roads. That became a good share of it. You cited, I think, 2011. I think that's when they went into the Roadless Act. They took away most of the tools. You're not allowed to use equipment in a wilderness area. Most of the wilderness areas are burned up. Some of the fires we got going now, they had people fighting, you know, put that in quotes, paying lawyers to create the Opal Creek Wilderness Area, and that was the most recent burn. The Calmeopsis Wilderness, that I've studied fairly closely, has now burned four times since it was created. So you're not allowed to even take, you're not allowed to have a road in that area. You're not allowed to have a motorized vehicle. You can't have an airplane fly over it. So they just tie your hands, and then they say, we're going to have a pristine forest. And people that are doing modeling at the university or the agencies. So, and they are wrong. You look at it, you've got any experience, and you go, well, this is kind of nuts. This is going to create giant fires. And then they say, oh, no, we're scientists. Stand back. You're going to have a pristine forest. And then they retire or get transferred to another location.
Well, the thing that really kind of confuses me and mystifies me, and I can't get my head around it, at the same time, they will allow you to build structures directly adjacent to the pristine forest on private lands, and they have neighborhoods and subdivisions being opened, all the while knowing that they're living directly adjacent to a tinderbox.
Well, I think most people don't know that. I think they believe the government that says this is going to turn into old growth forest, and there's going to be spotted owls. You'll have the spotted owls on your bird feeder. So people are not thinking that they're going to get burned out. They're thinking that they've got legitimate managers managing the forest, and that they've got basically free playground. So it's only becoming recent that the general public is look at Gavin Newsom, look at our governor, Kate Brown, look at the governor of Washington, Inslee. They're all saying, oh, this is climate change. We have to have a carbon tax on your car, and you got to drive electric so the climate will stop changing, because that's causing these fires, not the fuel buildup, not the mismanagement. So people aren't getting the full story, and they're making decisions based on poor information in those instances.
Obviously, if you have extensive drought or elongated drought conditions, that doesn't help. But by the same token, doesn't that raise the importance of what you're talking about, the remediation techniques in managing a safe forest?
Absolutely. We're not having an extended drought here, despite the statements. We had them in the 1930s. California's had them for actually 1 in 200-year extended droughts. We have seasonal droughts, and those have been the same for about 500 years. It gets dry at this time of year. And August and September in Oregon, June and July in California and Eastern Oregon, and goes into November. So it depends on the local climate, but the climate has been pretty darn predictable for centuries.
Yeah, you know, I remember in Hurricane Katrina, there were a number of forestry people that were outsourced to FEMA. When they came down here for the hurricane, and I remember them talking about they could no longer have controlled burns, but they were using what was called, I think it's called air curtain incinerators, where they were actually burning undergrowth by, you know, cutting it up and bringing it to these incinerator boxes in the middle of a forest to try and prevent and reduce the possibility of having these forest fires. And they've tried, and they were ultimately shut down from what I'm told. And it just seems like every remediation technique that they've tried out there, the environmentalists have come in to shut them down. And now we're facing what we're facing right now. And obviously, this can't be good for the air quality. I keep getting all of these alerts that air quality is horrible in California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and others.
I've been breathing smoke since Monday. You can maybe hear it in my voice. My eyes are bloodshot. This is the worst air conditions I've ever seen, and I'm 72 years old. It compares a lot to when Mount St. Helens blew up, but that pretty much only lasted a couple days. This has been more than a week now.
I want to shift when we come back, if you have a few more moments with us, about the arguments they're making about climate change, because I hear them use the term generically, but I don't know exactly what it is that they're actually talking about. and the nexus and or the connection to these wildfires. We'll be right back with Dr. Bob Zybeck, experienced forester with a PhD in environmental science. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. We are back, and we're talking to Dr. Bob Zybeck, experienced forester with a PhD in environmental science, and is the program manager for the Oregon Website and Watersheds Project, a 501c3 educational website focused on the scientific management of Oregon's natural and cultural resources. So, Dr. Zybeck, when we hear, you know, the rhetoric in and around whether this is caused by climate change versus what you and I have been talking about, what specifically are they saying? I hear the word climate change being thrown about, but I'm not really hearing any specifics as to the cause and effect of that to forest fires.
That's because there isn't any. This is really a political movement. It's really bothersome. It's a misdirection. When I and others predicted we'd be start having these huge fires back in the 90s, the government agencies that had put these in place and promised us spotted owl habitat and old growth and pristine environments when it was burning up in front of their eyes, then they said, well, this is a natural process somehow. And then when we went to harvest the dead trees, they said, oh, it's not spotted owl habitat anymore. It's blackback woodpecker habitat now. And then
say that again. It's a what? I've never heard of this.
This is a true story. When California's forest burned, some in southern Oregon, the first thing you do is you go in and you take out all the dead trees because they're now air-dried firewood. So your following fires become more dangerous and hotter. But the environmentalists and the environmental law industry stepped in and they said, wait a minute, this is ephemeral, critical habitat for the endangered blackback woodpecker. So you can't log, and they got away with it. So that's one reason these fuels are building up and continuing. They say climate change, but I do forest history. For 500 years, our climate has not changed. I mean, it changes in periods of time, like the 1930s, there was extended drought. There's times when there's more snow, more wind, more hurricanes, more flooding, and then less. But these events go all the way back to the Bible. They're called biblical in extent for a reason. It's all through history. So the average seasons, the type of weather we get during the seasons, that's been pretty stable for centuries. So the climate change people, it's political. You'll notice that most of them are Democrats, and they are trying to scare people and get them to pay higher taxes, and so they've been real successful there. But when they say that it causes a forest fire, that's just one bridge too far. That's just ridiculous.
The one thing that kind of confused me too, especially in your region, and I think you would agree because you know it better, far better than I do, I love my wine, right? So I go to Napa and Sonoma and that area a lot. And what you learn when you go there is that between the Sierra Nevadas and the coastline, there are a number of microclimates. I mean, you can be within 10 miles of one space to another space and have a completely different climate pattern. Is that correct?
Yep. Yep. We've got the ocean here. And so within a few miles of the ocean in Oregon, we got the fog belt. Entirely different trees grow there, entirely different weather. Then we've got the interior valleys, same thing. And then we got the Cascades, which high elevation, snow year round, same thing. And you go over the Cascades and you're in a desert. So you can almost pick your weather just by where you drive. And the weather in those areas has been, for my lifetime, I'm in my 70s. My studies go back to the very earliest historical records. It's about the same. this whole thing about climate is changing and it's a catastrophe is pretty much a snow job.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the point I was trying to make is that where I can't get my head around this is that when they say climate change, meaning, you know, generally what, because these microclimates are really unique to that region of the United States, right? I mean, they're much smaller, they're much more compact, they present different challenges, and part of that issue, it makes it all the more important that this deforestation and or the management of the forest is heightened, the necessity to do so, because of these microclimates and the challenges thereof.
They're not really challenging. We adapt.
Right.
Death Valley has some palm trees in it next to some oases, so probably people planted those there hundreds of years ago. That's the only way the seeds could get there. In the Douglas fir region, we manage the trees different than you do with the sequoias or the redwoods. For the reason you're saying, it's got entirely different growing conditions, entirely different weather, and so we adapt to that. Now, climate change, I think they're talking about global temperatures and one degree of this or that, and Florida is going to be underwater and all the snow is going to disappear from Mount Kilimanjaro. And what really irritates me is this is exactly what the medieval priests did. They said, I got to speak in Latin because that's how God talks to me. And if you don't give me a bunch of money, you're going to burn in hell. So I can save your soul, but it'll cost you a few bucks. We've got the same thing going now, except the climate alarmists are saying, well, if you don't give us some money, the earth is going to burn and your grandchildren are going to hate you. So it's this big political scare tactic. It's not science, but they get modelers who are not scientists, they're technicians, to back their story, and they pay them handsomely for that. So we have this whole mythology of climate change catastrophe, and it's not happening. 30 years later, didn't happen. In the early 90s, they said this is going to be terrible in 20 years, in 30 years. Now they're telling us it's going to be terrible in 12 years. It's
well, Joe Biden said if we have another 4 years of Trump, it's going to be disastrous as it relates to this issue. And that's what I'm trying to get my head around, these scare tactics, these political sound bites that, you know, in trying to connect the science to what's actually happening. And every forestry person that I've ever talked to has honed in on exactly what you're saying here today, that this is what's necessary in order to manage these forests appropriately.
They need to be actively managed. They're beautiful. They're safe. They're productive. They create taxpaying jobs. And instead, they're shutting them down. They're causing poverty. And the forests are burning up. So if they're trying to actually save an animal, which does not seem very realistic given the history of the area, then those animals are burning up. So, the whole thing, and we're quoting people like Joe Biden. My God. I don't know who his scientific advisors are, but I'm guessing AOC has got a pretty heavy hand in it.
let me ask you this question. Let's assume they're right. Let's for argument's sake assume that some of this is there are multiple reasons for this, climate change being one. These things are not mutually exclusive, right? I mean, the tactics and strategies that you're talking about in managing a healthy forest are not mutually exclusive as it relates to climate change. If they are right, doesn't that increase the necessity to manage these things in a much more nimble and forward-leaning, productive way?
That's exactly right. If we're having all this climate confusion or whatever they want to call it that's going on, we have to pay more attention to our forests and our natural resources because apparently they're under attack by Mother Nature. And so we've got to pay closer attention. We can't walk away and let them become fallow. That's what a lot of people don't realize is that people have been managing the forests in the United States for thousands of years. And when you say, we have to have a pristine forest, nobody can go into it, we've got to take the roads out, that's pretty much a racist position. They're saying that people are not good for forests, we got to get them out, and we've got to let the forest health develop some biodiversity, and because that would be natural. So basically invent words or change the meanings of words to justify their actions, but it's 180 degrees from what they should be doing if they actually knew what they were talking about.
Yeah. So that's the part that really gets me. So, you know, I put myself in their position, and it's like, okay, I embrace, and I'm not one that totally discounts climate change by any stretch of the imagination. And I do believe that there are things that we're doing here on Earth that are probably counterproductive. And I'm not a scientist by any stretch of the imagination, but I will give them their due. But what I don't understand is that we are risking lives. People are dying. Property's being destroyed. We're letting them build neighborhoods adjacent to these federal lands, as if and though there's no risk. There's no challenge. There's nothing there. And then we've basically handcuffed ourselves, shackled our legs, and hogtied ourselves from doing anything productive inside of these forests. And that's where this whole thing runs astray for me. You know, whether it's some kind of whatever back woodpecker or the spotted owl or otherwise, you know, for every action, there's a reaction. And sometimes those are necessary. Am I overstating this or understating this?
The only thing I'd – no, not at all. The only thing I'd slightly disagree with is letting people build next to a forest. Well, it's private land. They should have the right to do it. People have lived in those areas for thousands of years. It's the mismanagement of the forest. They're going in, and they're not accurately informed that the Forest Service has pretty much abandoned its obligations, pretty much changed things so that now they've created this extremely hazardous situation. And so they're not being fully informed when they're choosing their building spots. From 1952 until 1986, in all of Western Oregon, where a lot of these fires are happening right now, we've got five or six catastrophic scale fires going on right now. But from 1952 to 1986, there was only one large scale wildfire in all of Western Oregon. And that was because at that time, we had a federal housing boom going on. The baby boom generation was building houses into the suburbs and so on. And so we were doing active management on our federal lands. We were building roads. We were logging. We were planting trees. We were doing prescribed burning. And we didn't have any major fires. So there's the proof right there. The other proof, of course, being, as I said earlier, private lands, which are actively managed, aren't burning up. It's federal lands. So it's not climate. That's really irresponsible of the governors that are saying that. And it's remarkable that they're every one of them, just like the cities where they're having the riots, are Democrats. So it's a political issue, and they're trying to sell pseudoscience to get their way. And their way seems to be anti-logging, anti-rural family and business. Yeah. That's the evidence.
The irony of what you're saying right now is that that's exactly what Gavin Newsom said. He said, you know, this is happening on the federal lands. This isn't happening on the other. He said that just the other day, obviously, but his overarching theme was still climate change. But he basically supports what you're saying here today, is that's where this is all occurring. And the irony, I don't know how the climate is that discriminating that it only attacks the federal property and not the privately owned land. And that's why I'm completely mystified by this argument, because that's what I'm hearing from foresters here in Louisiana, although our climate challenges are much different than what yours are there. But they're doing the prescribed burns. They're doing the controlled burns. They're managing their forests. You know, when you think of Crown Zellerbach and all of these other forest timber companies and so forth, that's what they do. And we're not having forest fires.
And that's the same with the Weyerhaeuser and Georgia Pacific out here. They're managing their land. My crews, I was in reforestation business. We did 85,000 acres over a 20-year period. I don't know of a single acre that's ever been subjected to a wildfire. So the whole argument, the whole presentation, the whole fear tactic that they're trying to put out to the public is so we can pay a higher carbon tax at the pump. But the bad thing is all of those things we're describing, logging, prescribed burning, take manpower, and they produce a profit. And those people are paying taxes. And so the counties are benefiting, local parks and schools are benefiting, the federal government is benefiting. Here, with everything burning up, they create a bunch of bureaucrat jobs, people sitting around offices playing on computers, nobody's allowed in the forest, and we have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars fighting fire. So we're just eating up tax revenue with government employees and wasted resources. It's just the exact opposite of what was taking place from post-World War II until 1980s.
Well, when we come back, I took a little time to go look at some of this, you know, they were saying because of this hot summer that we're having. And I want to bounce a few thoughts off of you, if you don't mind. We'll be right back with Dr. Bob Zybeck, experienced forester with a PhD in environmental science out there in Oregon. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back with Dr. Bob Zybeck, experienced forester with a PhD in environmental science, and we've been talking about climate change as to whether or not that's a cause of these forest fires that you see folks experiencing in both California, Oregon, Washington State, and the state of Idaho at the present time. Doc, I was doing a little research about temperatures, and obviously I think this political soundbite that's being put out there right now is because we have experienced what they're saying are above average temperature outlook in June through August of 2020 for much of this region. So what I uncovered, though, is that not unlike in 05 and 2010 and 2016, they're predicting that we're in a La Nina transition, and any time leading up to that transitional period, we always experience these above average temperatures. Are you familiar with that? Your thoughts?
A little bit. I had George Taylor, who was Oregon State climatologist, on my committee, and he's kind of an expert on the topic, and I think that's exactly right. That's an ocean condition that's just maybe in the last 10 to 20 years, really, we've really started to understand. And when people say we're having above average temperatures, like it's the end of the earth, to have average temperatures, you've got to have above average temperatures
and
below
average. I am so glad that you pointed that out. You know, because it's almost as if average is a static thing, right? It's not dynamic. There's nothing below, nothing above. Another difficulty that I'm having in getting my head around and totally mystifies me. Let me ask you, is anything changing? I mean, obviously, the breadth and depth of what is going on here, the challenge that our firefighters are having, the property loss, the devastation, air quality impacting everyone. Is anyone kind of changing their thought process as it relates to managing these federal lands?
You know, I think there's a couple of dramatic changes going on as we're speaking due to all these fires in Western Oregon that have been burning up all the critical habitat and burning up homes. I think people are finally beginning to realize that they've been hoaxed, that we've had a giant environmental racket going on for 30 or 40 years, and this is the reward. Unemployment, smoked out cities, burnt up forests. They don't mention the millions of wildlife that get killed during these events. So they're trying to save wildlife. Well, they're not doing a very good job. What they're doing has been really detrimental, very costly, and we're paying the price. But the lawyers have been well paid.
You know, it's interesting because I hear the same thing when I talk to the wine growers, and y'all have them in Oregon, too, out in Willamette Valley, and I'm sure they'll tell you the same things that I'm hearing from those in Sonoma and Napa, is that they are not managing the lands appropriately, and that's what's putting their livelihood at risk. And You know, and look, they're as much as anyone else being an expert in the temperature, right? And they track every time that they pick the fruit and everything else. And I love listening to the people on the ground that are there, you know, thriving, making a living, understanding what these condition challenges are. And they're saying the same you're saying.
Well, it's because those are the facts. The people that work in the woods or farmers, they might listen to the politics for a while, but in the case of grapes, and it's the same as trees, they're just on a different growth schedule. You have the same seasons. You need the same number of frost-free days. You don't want the smoke. That'll affect the flavor. But it's ironic that Gavin Newsom, I think, has got a big family winery. I don't think he's had to shut down during the pandemic either. He does say it's our federal lands, but then he comes out and very arrogantly and very condescendingly says, well, I'm not going to talk to any more climate deniers. This forest fire proves that my advisors and I are correct, that the climate is killing our industry. And it's just not
actually
true.
Actually, they produce a wine I like, Plumjack, to be specific.
Doc,
I cannot thank you enough for joining us today. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Oh, you bet. I appreciate it.
Thank you. All righty, folks. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Mortgage Financial phone and text line. Stay with us.